Thank you very much. I'm going to start with a short quiz. What is the cause of climate change? Carbon emissions. What's the cause of global terrorism? Religious fundamentalism. What's the cause of the Fukushima nuclear disaster? Earthquake and tsunami. No, those are all the symptoms of the underlying disease. The root cause of these problems is this. It's me, looking slightly more youthful and slimmer. It's ordinary human beings like me and you. It's human choice and behaviour that causes those problems. We know what causes tsunamis, and we know how to avoid them. If we choose to build a nuclear reactor in this place, at this time, it's our choice. So limited are human moral capacities for the kind of world that we've created for ourselves. Ingemar Persson and I have recently argued that we may need to even change our very moral nature. Why is this? First of all, humans are a violent species. 1% of the human population are psychopaths, yet they're responsible for 50% of the violent crime. And then there are fanatics and ideologues. We don't live in the African savannah with sticks and stones today. We live in a radically technologically advanced world. Richard Posner estimates there's enough plutonium floating around to build 20,000 atomic bombs. This is the kitchen of a Swedish man called Richard Handel, unemployed, who sourced enough radioactive radium and uranium to almost fire up a reactor. He was only found when he reported himself to authorities asking if his experiments were legal. More scary are biological weapons. At the top is a mouse infected with mousepox, but this strain was made 100% lethal by genetic engineering. Below it is a poliovirus, but not a natural poliovirus, one scientists created in a laboratory. We could make the same change to mousepox as we could to smallpox, and within a decade, small-scale laboratories could construct this and create a super virulent strain of smallpox. Now, it only takes 1 in 7 billion people to want to do this, and tens of thousands of people will have this capacity. Steven Pinker may be right that the rates of homicide are reducing, but the risk that we pose to ourselves is ever increasing through the advance of technology. Now, there's a second, even more common problem than violence. As Charles Darwin famously and brilliantly realised, we're not designed for any purposes. We're designed as the products of blind evolution. Now, for most of human history, almost all of our history, we existed as hunter-gatherers. We existed in small groups of 150, and morality and our moral dispositions evolved to facilitate cooperation within that small group. So we cared about our family and friends and our group, and we cooperated with them, but tended to free ride when we weren't observed. But we were distrustful of other strangers, xenophobic, and often at war with them over resources. We couldn't affect the distant future, so we focused on the near term. And because it was so easy to harm each other, we developed moralities about preventing harm, but not benefiting each other. Now, this kind of moral disposition, this kind of animal, is not fit for the globalised world we've created for ourselves. One problem we're not fit to solve is global inequality and poverty, the failure to aid. We could solve this problem, but we choose not to. In 2008, only 5 countries, all small Scandinavian countries, had reached the very modest UN target of donating 0.7% of their gross domestic product in foreign aid. The richest countries at the time, the US and Japan, were at the bottom at 0.2%. Inequality is relentlessly increasing. Today, these 3 happy individuals, the richest men in the world, own as much as the poorest 600 million. Now, why don't we deal with this problem? The US has spent $3 trillion prosecuting its wars in Afghanistan and Iraq in response to the killing of around 2,000 people. But over 50 years has donated only $2 trillion to foreign aid, which could have saved millions, hundreds of millions of lives. The reason for this is, first of all, like our hunter-gatherer ancestors, we believe that we're responsible for what we do, but not for what we fail to do, for the consequences of our emissions. So since we're not killing people in the developing world, we don't see ourselves as being responsible. Secondly, we care much more about our own. Americans value an American life 2,000 times more than a non-American life. And lastly, our psychology is just not set up for this kind of problem. We can empathise with single individuals, but the more people we're expected to empathise with, the less we give. We're incapable, insensitive to huge numbers. Another problem that we're not fit to solve is climate change. Now, historically, the problem that climate change represents is what's called the tragedy of the commons. Human communities had a small resource that they had to constrain their consumption of, like a pasture land. And how did they do that? Well, they knew each other. They trusted each other. They could see the difference that they made. And if someone was a free rider, you could detect them and punish them. But that's not the kind of tragedy of the commons that environmental problems today represent. These are caused by citizens with millions of people, anonymous to each other, with little reason to trust each other, and the contributions each of those people make is negligible. The prohibition against harming doesn't kick in. So we don't see that we're responsible. Still worse, the effects are uncertain, they're in the distant future, and we're programmed to think about the near future, and they'll affect people in Southeast Asia and Africa. We're simply not set up to deal with these sorts of problems. Also, they would require sacrifices. We're not fit to make those sorts of sacrifices. After the Kyoto Protocol, Americans were surveyed. 50% of them would give $50 a month to conform, but only 10% of them would give $100 a month. Now, social policy, legal reform, political reform, these are all used to address these problems. But I want to ask now, could we change those very dispositions that we have? We've been enormously effective at changing other animals. The greatest human genetic experiment, the breeding of dogs, shows the power to change the disposition of animals. All those 300 different breeds are due to just genetic selection. But today, science is even more powerful. It can make a rabbit glow in the dark and a human embryo glow by transferring genes from a jellyfish. These are not moral enhancements, but they demonstrate the awesome power of science. Indeed, the power of the biological revolution, the biological engine, is best shown, I think, by this. Scientists genetically modified a mouse, which you'll see here at the front, who's hungry. He's running at 20 metres a minute looking for food. Behind is a normal mouse. Now, they both fall off, get back on, look for the food, but the normal mouse is exhausted after 200 metres. The genetically engineered mouse goes on for 5 kilometres. This is caused by just a small change in the glucose cycle. So we can profoundly affect biology. We can create super mice. We can create fluorescent animals. Indeed, humans have looked at enhancing themselves and tried to improve their cognitive and physical abilities, with some success. Caffeine, second largest export in the world, it's a cognitive enhancer. Today, human sport is dominated by doping and performance enhancement. Could we not only improve our cognitive abilities and our physical abilities, could we improve our moral capacities? This is a frightening prospect to many people. Many will remember the aversion therapy experiments of the 50s and 60s, psychosurgery, but it needn't be that way. Israeli psychologists studied courtroom decisions, and they found that the leniency of the judge's decision dropped off markedly the longer it was since the judge last time ate. Clearly, we could improve this by delivering glucose in a more regulated way, a simple moral enhancement. Sleep deprivation reduces empathy, as do many extraneous factors, such as the dirtiness of a desk. This is one of the wackier proposals to deal with Adolf Hitler, was to put estrogen in his food and make him more like his docile sister. In fact, this is a crude form of moral enhancement today. Prisoners, paedophiles, are offered hormonal castration, administration of estrogens to reduce their sex drive. Many of the drugs that we take today affect our moral behaviour in mixed ways. A very common drug is the antidepressant Prozac or citalopram. It raises serotonin in the brain. This makes people less aggressive, more cooperative, more prepared to engage in fair bargaining. It's not a straightforward moral enhancer, but it has some moral effects. It shows, unsurprisingly, that drugs can affect the way we choose. Another much-discussed drug is a substance is oxytocin, a neurohormone released by sex, breastfeeding, and the oral contraceptive pill. Oxytocin makes people more trusting, more trustworthy, more prepared to cooperate, but only within their group. It reduces cooperation with out-group members. It's being trialled in couples therapy for dysfunctional couples unable to communicate with each other to augment communication. In Oxford, Sylvia Turbeck, one of my DPhil students, showed that propranolol reduces implicit racial bias. A very common moral enhancer that's given to children all around the world is Ritalin. Poor impulse control or ability to delay gratification is bad for your academic performance, bad for your ability to make friends, bad for economic success, and highly likely to end you up in jail. Ritalin reduces aggressive violent behaviour in children, but also in adults. A recent Swedish study showed a 30% reduction in men and 40% in women of people with attention deficit disorder by taking Ritalin. This is a very simple form of moral enhancement. Magnetic stimulation can affect people's behaviour. In one study, the right temporoparietal junction was stimulated. It caused people to judge less harshly attempts to harm that were unsuccessful. That's not a moral outcome, morally desirable outcome, but it is a relevant outcome. Our psychology is not a virgin, pristine forest that the ugly bulldozers of external intervention may destroy. Intrinsic and extrinsic factors affect our moral choices fundamentally. And importantly, we're not all equal. Some people are very high on empathy, others are psychopaths. Our levels of serotonin, testosterone, oxytocin all vary. Evolution just would not have selected the exact distribution of these characteristics that make for the kinds of problems that we need solving today. What should we aim for? This is obviously one of the great questions. What is a moral enhancement? Here are some basic thoughts common to all moralities. I've mentioned reduction of violence and improvement of impulse control. Not only does Ritalin, anticonvulsants do this, but neurofeedback. It's being used in people with antisocial personality disorders to reduce violence. All forms of morality require some level of altruism and self-sacrifice. There's evidence that there is a biological basis to differences in this. The COMT gene comes in two variants. One variant is associated with twice as much altruism as the other. We may well be able to increase people's altruism. And importantly is empathy. Empathy is central to all moral theories and moral deliberation, the ability to feel another person's pain and to universalise. The Christian golden rule is based on this, and it clearly differs between people. In fact, it's decreasing in the American population, especially in the last 10 years, according to a recent study. What form moral enhancements will take will depend on what the science reveals. Some of them may be context specific. It may be that they're specific to, say, paedophiles or psychopaths or aggressive criminals or couples undergoing marital therapy. But they may be general, because it's important to realise that we all already engage in moral enhancement through education and various social institutions. We aim at certain values. And just as technology is starting to enhance our ability to learn, transcranial electrical stimulation can enhance the acquisition of numeracy and mathematical and other skills, it may be able to enhance the acquisition of moral skills, such as empathy. We're not destined to destroy ourselves. Political, social, and legal reform are very important to changing our destiny, but so too may be changing our very nature. The famous physicist Stephen Hawking conducted a poll asking people, what do you think the main risks to humanity are? And eventually he was asked, what do you think the answer to that is? And he said, climate change, nuclear war, biological terrorism, infectious disease. And he said, the next century is critical. And maybe, in order to survive the next century, we have to genetically engineer ourselves to make ourselves wiser and less aggressive. Genetic engineering is only one form of biological intervention. The drugs that we use, the technologies that we develop, could also be used not just to improve our cognitive and physical abilities, but the very moral capacities that create the enormous problems that we've invented for ourselves this century. I believe that we have an urgent moral imperative not to employ any of these at this point, but to investigate the possibility that we can not only change the world, but change ourselves. Thank you.